Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. So it would appear, Steve, that we continue to be influencers despite having absolutely no desire whatsoever to be branded with that moniker.
No, I don't.
No.
But who have we influenced now?
Ed Dyer has been in touch. Okay. Ed says, hi there, just a quick email to say, due to a combination of listening to your podcast, peer pressure from a good mate with more landies than is healthy, and the approach of the big 40 years this year, I've finally bitten the bullet and bought one. He says he's got a 1969 Series 2A 109 with a 5 bearing, 2.25 diesel, and it's ace. There's a few bits to do, but the gearbox, engine and chassis are spot on, and he includes an image of a very, very lovely Series 3 109 pickup.
Nice bit of kit.
Sorry, it's Series 2A.
I was going to say, it's a late 2A, isn't it? Because it's got the
headlamps and the wings.
Outside, yeah.
Yes. Ed, absolutely top work. Really, really cool thing. And thanks for your email. We always like to get your emails. Always a treat, especially when they have a photo of a newly purchased Land Rover in them.
It's so exciting just getting any Land Rover, isn't it, for the first time, and you delve into it.
Oh, definitely.
And you look at it and you find things that are wrong that you didn't spot when you got a bit excited and carried away buying it.
Yeah, 100%. It's you always, you know, you dig deeper, you find things, you get to know the vehicle, and then before you know it, all is good and it is draining your bank account quicker than you can put money in it. But that's just Land Rovers.
Yeah, no, it is. I was talking to, we had Ian and Greg on, didn't we, on the podcast a few weeks ago.
Yes.
Speaking to Ian yesterday, and he said about this Discovery 2.
Oh, yeah.
That he's acquired and the logbook was put in his name.
Yes.
And I invited myself to his place so I can poke holes in it.
Okay.
Because I love it. I love poking holes in rusty Land Rovers. Or any rusty car, as long as they're not mine.
Well, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
If it's not yours, it can be quite enjoyable.
Finding all the rust spots is good fun.
Ian and I are going to do a YouTube video on dragging that Discovery out. Genuine hedge find.
See if it starts and all of that.
Exactly. See exactly what it needs and how much it will take to bring it back to life. I have a feeling it's quite crusty underneath.
That's why I invited myself. You'd have a go.
Oh, well. I don't think you're going to be disappointed with the amount of scale. Yes.
Well, the good thing is that you can buy all the parts to repair it, can't you?
You certainly can.
Hmm.
I mean, RCP were at Malvern, weren't they? Their chassis.
Yeah, but half chassis sections and
all the bits you need.
Welder on, and this is good.
Good for another 20-odd years.
Easily.
We continue to influence.
Okay.
Matt Holliday has emailed him before. He says, I hope you're doing well. You answered a question of mine last year on the podcast. Can you believe we've almost done 100 podcasts now?
Should we do like a special episode for the 100th?
That would be cool. I don't know
when it is.
Maybe we should...
This might be the 100th.
It isn't.
Is it not?
No. Maybe we should go to the pub and do one.
Yeah, we do need to do that.
100 episode pints.
Yeah, well, go on then. Yeah,
anyway, sorry, I'll just continue. He says, you answered a question of mine last year on the podcast about what would be the best jack for use in the desert. He says, we've now been to the desert and put the ARB jack, which I believe we recommended, to the test. What I didn't mention was it was for the Sahara Desert Challenge to Dakar from Portugal, which is why we went through a fair few tyres in the rocky stages of Mauritania. Yeah.
That place I've never been to. Yeah.
14 days and a round trip of 7,722 miles of pretty intense off-road driving through desert, mountains, beaches and remote cities. The Defender did not miss a beat, although I'll be finding sand in it for years to come. He says, I was wondering if you might want to include a picture in the Your Picture section of the mag. He sent some over and he says, the podcast and the magazine are real highlights for me and are fueling a slowly growing collection of Land Rovers, which has resulted in me having to move house for a larger garage. That is commitment.
It is. Yeah.
He says, if my wife asks, that definitely wasn't the reason to move. Thanks, Matt. And what is interesting about Matt's adventure, over 7,000 miles of off-roading, is the Land Rover he references in his email isn't quite what you might first associate with doing such a huge, epic trek, in that it is a new Defender.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It's
I thought you were going to say like a naturally aspirated Defender. It'll be still there. He's only 2,000 miles in.
No, I'm trying to get the image up. But yeah, it's a new Defender. It's very cool. Some cracking images, which will be appearing in the Month in Pictures or the Your Picture section of Land Rover Monthly over the next few months. So if you want your Land Rover to star in Land Rover Monthly, all you have to do is send an email to editorial@lrm.co.uk with a picture that you particularly like, maybe an adventure you've been on that you're really proud of, and it can appear in print, immortalized in print in the magazine. There it is. How cool is that?
Yeah, very cool.
All covered in red dust.
Yeah, really, really good.
Raised air intake and nearly 8,000 miles off-road. They are very, very capable things. But I believe you've got some news.
News.
The Jag.
The Jag has gone.
The Jag is gone.
Surprisingly.
Finally.
It went this week. Do you know what? I thought I'd got that firmly shoved up my backside. Not that I was desperate to get rid of it, but just the market has shifted significantly.
Yeah.
Enough to think, oh, okay. Yeah, the first guy that came to, first to see will buy. And he did.
Find another.
Yeah.
The only thing is, there's about 80 of them on their auto trade, so you could find
over 80, I think.
Is there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pulls like a train.
Pulls like a train.
Yeah, all of those nuggets we use.
MOT testers commented how clean it was, mate. All that nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. One careful lady owner.
That's it. If my favourite one is, if it doesn't sell, I'll just keep it. Well, obviously.
Yeah, no tyre kickers. No tyre kickers welcome.
Yeah, tyre kickers is a bit of an old one, but
price of application, I hate.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah.
You always know it's going to be overpriced if you have to ask.
Yes. And if it's on application, well, how else are you going to know? You're going to ring up. What's the price, mate? Well, I'm not telling you.
Yeah.
At that point, you tell them, so why hide it?
Stupid, isn't it?
Yeah.
The only reason you would hide the price is if you were scared of being ridiculed for how high.
Or the price is dictated by the attitude of the person ringing.
Maybe.
Because if you think, oh, they sound like they've got money, the price has gone up.
Do you think?
It might be. Who knows?
I've also done a sell recently. My wife's car, her Seat Leon, which I've been threatening to sell for ages, we've finally sold it. It sold within a week of being on eBay.
So Seat Leons sell faster than Jag XKs by a significant margin.
It turns out, I didn't know this at the time, I know we ummed and ahed about what we wanted when we bought that car, back in 2021, I think it was. And it turns out that the specification of it, if you like, and the colour and all that, and the engine is quite a rare combination in that model. You wouldn't think he was Seat Leon to Seat Leon, is he? Yeah. But I had loads of interest in it really quickly. And the first guy, much as you said with the Jag, first guy who came to look at it, bought it. So it was actually a very easy sale.
I suppose if someone's looking for a specific, whatever car it is, if they're looking for a specific one and it shouts at them, buy me, then you're going to buy it. And I knew somebody would buy that Jag as soon as they got in it, because it was a good one.
Yeah.
And I can say that now I've sold it. It was definitely, I would put all my trust in it. It was a good one. But what that's done is it's left me feeling a bit like I've only got two vehicles.
Yeah. Well, you haven't. You've got three, but one's in bits.
Yeah, still.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's be honest, it's still going to be in bits.
But that is, the tub has been painted soon. So
yeah, the tub goes to paint on, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, tomorrow.
So days.
Yeah, the very next day. So the tub's going to, and that'll take a lot of paint.
It will. It's a big lump.
It is a big lump. And we're going to do like a textured colour fit, you know,
underneath. Yeah, yeah, that'll be smart.
So there's a lot of prep, paint to go on that.
That's the last piece to go though, isn't it?
The tub, front wings, bonnet, front panel.
Oh, but apart from like the whole front end, it's the last piece to go, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the whole half, yeah. Well, basically the front half of the Land Rover, they've not yet been painted or thought about.
I thought you were further ahead than that, but
no.
We need to get the wiring loom through and do the brake pipes.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that this coming week probably, won't we?
Yeah, I should think so. Exciting times. But it does now mean that because my wife's, as I say, full-time commandeered the Freelander 2, I now currently daily drive V8 Series 3.
Have you come here today in that?
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. It's actually, as series Land Rovers go, not bad to drive.
It's not so bad. I mean, we're at the right time of year now. It feels a bit less horse-like in the air
today. It was. Beautiful blue skies.
Series Land Rover weather.
I did stop short of taking the door tops off on the way to LRM Towers this morning, but I had my sunglasses on. It had a nice draft going through the cab. It was actually very pleasant. But I, you know, it would
bankrupt me pretty quickly if I have to continue.
So you're at that danger point. So you've got a bit of money in your hand.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
What I'm going to do is...
And what you say on here, what you're actually going to do.
Right.
Over two different things.
What happened was, as we record this, the next couple of days are pretty busy and I'm out and about a lot. And because I don't have a car that can sit at 70 miles an hour for like 3 hours without me wanting to rip my ears off, I thought, I had a free day on Monday and I was like, oh, do you know what? This is a great opportunity to go and buy something so I don't have to rent a car later in the week.
Dangerous.
Which is absolute man maths.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, you don't sit and think about your purchase too long then.
There's a few offers on the table though.
You did like a social media...
poll.
Poll, right?
Yeah.
Have you listened to the results of that said poll?
So the overwhelming winner was TDV8 L322 Ranger.
It was, because I voted that for you.
Did you? Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. Quite a lot of people did, actually. And it is tempting. There's a couple near where I live that are for sale for sensible money, including one that I know personally, like a friend's family owns it, and they're looking to get rid of that because they want an L405. And that's the cringy Clarkson spec Tonga Green. But...
yes.
I don't know if I can bring myself to do it. I just don't.
Do you know the car?
They've had it a while. They've not had it years and years and years.
Okay, so you know it enough to know that.
I drove. Where's the one I helped my mate move house with?
Oh.
Because I've
played with it. And they have two.
Yeah, they've got an early TD6 and a TDV8. Right.
You said they were night and day different, so that you'd only go for the 3.6.
Yes. Yeah, and it is a nice car to drive, and I probably will go and look at it, but I just don't know, not just specific to that example, if I want to take the plunge. I just don't know, because to me, for a daily drivable car that you can jump in and go one end of the country or the other without thinking about it, I just want pure reliability, dependability, jump in it, don't worry about anything. The Freelander 2 has done that for near, 5 years probably.
Mm.
And it is just like, would I be cutting my nose off to spite my face by going, ooh, Range Rover, and getting an L322 and then just be constantly inconvenienced by it? What I really want in my heart of hearts, if I was going on You Only Live Once, I would go out tomorrow and buy a Discovery 4.
Here's a question.
Okay.
And you are ex Land Rover technician.
Yeah.
Which one could you fix easier yourself?
Discovery 4.
Okay.
But that's only because in my unit, we have a two-post ramp and I could take the body off the Discovery 4.
Yeah, but that's like worst case scenario.
But no, well, it is and it isn't, because taking the body off a Discovery 4 and having everything staring you in the face.
What I mean by that is worst case scenario is taking the body off something. Not many people are taking bodies off Discovery 4s that own them. Themselves.
Okay.
But that's a worst case scenario kind of job. You'd have to take the body off. But you could do that.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is I would rather take the body off a Discovery 4 and fix something that's very accessible than have to do a turbo, say, on an L322, which you can't take the body off, and you're struggling with rusted bolts and snapped off studs and things like that. Do you see what I mean?
You might... Right. So if you go and buy a Discovery 4...
Yeah.
Right. And I think the sensible choice is... You should.
Okay.
Well, because you can fix it yourself.
Yeah.
There's most jobs that are fixable at home on that you could do.
The only thing, 95% of that statement is correct. The 5% that isn't correct is the engine in the L322 is a lot more bulletproof than the 3-litre TDV6. Do you see what I mean?
True.
That's
true,
the
true.
Only stumbling block. Everything else on the Discovery 4, nothing phases me with regards to fixing it at all.
How much are secondhand 3-litre?
You wouldn't fit one.
You wouldn't go to next.
You'd do a genuine Land Rover remanufactured or QP online. That's pretty much the only places you should use generally.
Okay.
With regards to replacement TDV6s. I don't know. Again, it's one of them where you could buy one and it could serve you for 5 years and never put a foot wrong. It just want brakes, tires, things like that.
Next week.
Or you could literally buy it privately and 2 months down the line, it could lock itself up and then you're, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 grand out of pocket, which I can't afford to do. So that's my fun little predicament at the moment. And at the moment, the all sensible things point to buying another Freelander 2. But yeah, anyway, enough about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where I am at the moment. Currently daily driving the Series 3. Not ideal, not terrible. But yeah, there we go. So let's have another listener's question, shall we?
Does it
involve... Oh, hang on, because, no, before we move on, you've had thinkings about changing up your fleet slightly as well. So let's get that out in the air, shall we?
Right, okay. Because this is like, we go through, right? I think we're true of everybody probably listening to this. We go through the same thought process as everybody else.
Yeah.
Because it's our own money.
Yeah.
And it's our own bank balance that gets affected by buying something that's not right.
Yes.
So our daily car is a BMW 3 Series.
That you share with your wife.
Yeah, she uses it every day, mostly.
Yeah.
But that car does 18, 20,000 miles a year.
That's the equivalent of my Freelander 2.
And that's got 150,000 miles on clock.
Yeah.
So that's not putting a foot wrong at the minute. But the 90 is not ideal for me doing long distance, TD5, hardtop 90.
Yeah.
So if I need to go and see clients or whatever, sometimes it's not right. So my wife gets that to drive that, and I get to drive the BMW.
Sure.
So now that the Jag's gone, and the BMW probably will go eventually, I need a 4-seater car shaped like a Defender.
Well.
So I'm thinking, do I sell my TD5?
Yep.
And use the money from that and the money from the Jag and just go for it and buy a TDCi 110?
Yes.
From snorkels and roof racks to engine swaps and body kits, there are loads of modifications you can make to your Land Rover. If you're struggling to get insurance on your modded Landy, speak to specialist insurance broker Adrian Flux. With like-for-like cover on both cosmetic and performance upgrades, they'll help keep your pride and joy protected. Call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
But I love a utility.
You can't go wrong with either. They're both going to hold their money.
Yeah. It's not it's so much that because I love driving my 90, but it's not...
It's a two-seater van, isn't it?
It's a two-seater agricultural van because it's a TD5. TDCi sit nice on the road, don't they? For long distance.
They're a little bit more refined, aren't they? The aircon's better. The heat is better. This, yeah.
Yeah.
A 110, you can get the seat further back as well.
And the other predicament I have, because I built a camping trailer from an army thing, really, I need something that can have a
NATO hitch.
NATO hitch on the back, which is a Defender. Because they don't sit on a Discovery, do they?
No. I think you should just do it.
Have you seen how much they are?
They are.
Of course you have. We know you have. But I can't get my head around it. But that could be a car for life.
That would be, I think, the solution, really.
I think I could probably have that car... If you buy the right TDCi, you'd probably be a Land Rover for life.
Probably.
Really. The TD5 is, really, but it doesn't quite...
Here's a question, then. If your TD5 is a 110 station wagon, would you be keeping it? Or would you be updating it?
I just think for the amount of higher speed road work that I do, as in, like, up and down the A1, and even towing that camper trailer up into Yorkshire and stuff like that.
Yeah.
TD5 is fine, but it is a little bit too unrefined.
Okay.
I put sound insulation in it, as you know. It does help. But a TDCi is just that little bit.
So if you've got a 110 utility or station wagon that you're looking to move on, preferably a 2.2, so 2012 onwards, and you've got an itch for a 90 hardtop TD5 in rather lovely, what colour is yours?
Coniston Green.
With the quintessential white roof and wheels, email Steve.
Yeah, there you go.
Editorial at lrm.co.uk and I'll pass it on.
Yeah, tempt me, because you never know, do you?
Any colours you don't want?
Ideally, I'd like air conditioning. Have I gone soft?
No.
Look, you can't open events, can you?
Any colours you don't want?
Mm.
I wouldn't have a black one, personally.
No, don't think a black one. No, really.
Open to options. Well, good stuff. There we go. Maybe a little bit of changing up in the fleet going on. Interesting.
I think it might be time. I don't know. I feel the need.
Got an itch.
Not really. Because, you know, I looked at L322s, didn't I? And everyone's been sharing L322s with me. But I just
they're another car like Disco 4 where you could run one for years and it'd be absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Or it would just inconvenience you and annoy you and just kick you in the shins.
Every don't season. Need that level of luxury either. I like the crudeness of a Defender, I do.
I like the simplicity. Yeah. See, what I really need to do is not buy anything else, get the engine put back together on the blue 110, the parts of which were arriving later this week, and then just drive up because it does like 30 to the gallon and it's a lot more tolerable than a Series 3.
Do that then.
I will. That's what I should do. Rather than spend like X amount on a Range Rover, I should just get that done, which is tax exempt in April as well. So even more money saved.
Yeah.
Winner, winner. Anyway, another listener's question, and I believe you've got the answer for this. Are you ready?
Yeah, yeah, go on. Fire away.
We've done some genuine consumer advice, haven't we? Vedran Kyrgyz gets in touch. He says, "Hey guys, long-time listener from the Pacific Northwest of America. Wish I could get hard copies of the mag here in the States, but I know that's not super economical." Yeah, unfortunately, it does cost a fair bit of money to ship magazines about the place. He says, "Any rate, I'm working on a 1970s NADA, North American Dollar Era, Series 2A 88-inch. I bought it as a hard top, but we enjoyed topless driving last summer so much that I've converted to a soft top in anticipation for next summer. Our climate here is similar to yours, mild temperatures, lots of overcast weather and rain." We've certainly had that the last month or so, haven't we?
Well, yeah.
It has not stopped. Unfortunately, that resulted in rescheduling Rip and Spares Day.
So this will be in
after
this is going out, should have the weekend. So if you do turn up and if you did turn up and hadn't seen all of our emails and social media posts, apologies, but it is postponed till the 19th of April.
Yeah, so we hope to see you then.
Yeah.
Annoying, but it was unfortunately necessary because the ground would have just got destroyed and then
it's far too wet. So I've never seen rain like it.
Yeah. Right. He goes on to say, "Our climate here is similar to yours, mild temperatures, lots of overcast weather, and rain and drizzle 6 to 8 months of the year. The Land Rover's parked outside for a week or two at a time, but not left out year round. I'm curious to get your thoughts on soft top longevity and expected leaks on the soft top. I see on the various forums there's chat about modern canvas not being treated with the old school chemicals and only lasting 4 to 5 years, whereas the older tops seem to last 10 years plus. What have you guys seen with regards to that? Any tips to extend the life of the soft top? And aside from an all over, where should I keep an eye on the soft top for drips and leaks? Many thanks, Ved."
Right, so I put this question to John Rayson, who is a sales manager at Exmoor Trim.
Yes.
Because I didn't know we were quite qualified to answer that one.
Fair.
Because it doesn't involve buying Land Rovers, basically, as any ones we're qualified on answering.
Indeed.
So he said, yes, what you have read is correct. Modern canvas is worlds apart from the traditional canvas supplied to vehicles from the 50s and 60s. Health and safety was one of the main reasons the old school chemicals were often carcinogenic and or hazardous to health or the environment and promptly banned. As such, replicating the canvas of old, some of which we still see on vehicles today from the 60s, isn't feasible or possible. Which is a shame, really, but
yeah,
you know, things change. Most treatments currently are water-based. As such, we recommend treating and retreating your hood every 6 to 12 months or, in particularly extreme conditions, every 3 months. Treatments like Nick Wax or Fabsil often offer both UV protection and weather protection for your canvas. Similar stuff you put in the tents, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like on the seams and stuff. Ensuring to keep the hood clean. Best practice is allowing any mud or otherwise to dry and use a stiff brush to remove as much as possible, but not scrubbing.
Right, okay.
Okay, so before washing with water and then reproofing, it's worth noting that when reproofing, to make sure to clean and reproof both the outside and the inside.
Huh.
It's quite a lot of work involved, isn't it?
It is, but when you consider, a full soft top isn't mega cheap. It's probably about 500 quid. You want to look after it for your possible.
But it's still, it's a fabric that needs treatment.
It's like walking boots, isn't it?
It is really. It's like you'd put boot polish on, yeah. John goes on to say, when fitting the hood initially, there is a settling in period where the hood will shrink and find its place. it's important to keep tension on it during these initial weeks and first couple of months. They can shrink on it and then they can. Gaps.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than seeing a series Land Rover with the rear like tailgate flap about 2 inches too short.
Yeah, that's been people fold them up and leave them up.
Yeah,
not good. For any leaks or drips on the seams, typically these will be on the main joints across the front hoop, the rear hoop, and where the buckles have been sewn on. We recommend natural beeswax and simply rub it straight into the seams.
Right.
This does two things. It fills the gaps with the beeswax until the canvas has sufficiently shrunk to size and protects the area.
There's
top tips.
Very good.
The lifespan for canvas hoods is realistically 3 to 5 years.
Really?
It's not long, is it? But for just, you know, I mean, given that some of these other ones have been around since the 60s.
Yeah, true.
And that's only with care. So this likely is why we have seen constant demand for our Stayfast hoods.
Okay.
Which is a man-made alternative, similar to what Audi, BMW, Mercedes use for their convertible vehicle hoods. It doesn't shrink or leak and is waterproof with a layer of rubber sandwiched between the two layers of material.
Ah.
This is what I'd go for on mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And typically has a lifespan of 12 plus years. We've seen them being closer to 20 years old.
Wow.
So that's what I would do. But that material type is quite modern, isn't it?
Yes.
So you've got to be...
It looks different
from a series
traditional canvas. Yeah.
Depends, again, that's if you're keeping the vehicle outside.
What I would say...
3 to 5 years, stored inside a barn, it would last a lot longer, wouldn't it?
I've got an Exmoor trim 3/4 tilt on my Series 3.
Yeah.
Which is fitted most of the year round. I'd sometimes take it off in the summer. I haven't treated it as much as I should. I clean it. I haven't actually applied any kind of treatment to it in the time I've had it.
Okay.
It still keeps all the water out. You can see it shrink, like it goes, pulls itself tight when it gets wet, when it rains hard, and then it relaxes again.
Okay.
It never lets water in. It's not as, so it's a sand coloured one. It's faded a bit in the sun. But it, I mean, considering how tightly I strap it down and everything, it still was good as the day I fitted it, really, apart from looking a bit faded.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. I will proof it this summer, but it'll be interesting to see how much longer I can get out of it.
It's probably one of those jobs that, you just have to make a conscious effort to do it because you think, oh, I'll get round to doing that job. And because it's not an actual pressing issue,
yeah,
all of a sudden it will be. It's probably too late because the stitching could probably rot, couldn't it?
Possibly. I completely agree that the old school canvas, it is like when you handle it, you can feel it's different. But I don't think, I mean, like I say, I've had that on, I've taken it on and off a few times. It's constantly covered in road dirt from where the water flies up the back of the Land Rover. I do wash it off when I wash the Land Rover, but I haven't reproofed it, but it doesn't let a drop of water in.
Yeah, I think it's been, John's been very fair with the timescales and expectation there.
Yeah.
I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, I agree. Sure. And actually, depending on what your, like you said, depending on what your series looks like, you might opt to go for a more modern style, which has obviously more modern methods in its construction, and it will last a lot longer with less care. So there's a few options. But that's the reason you were right in that it's modern processes and banning of certain...
Exactly.
Old school chemicals that mean that canvas tilts don't last as long as they once did.
I know they said, yeah, those Stayfast ones are considerably more money. So you've got to work out whether you can probably get two traditional tilts for the same prices.
Yeah.
One of those. But again, horses and courses, isn't it?
Exactly that, yeah. It's, if the vehicle looks completely standard and unmessed with, you probably want to stick with an original style canvas in a nice period colour type thing.
I would for that, yeah.
Build
like a carport or something like that.
Just a lean-to. To
lean worst something like that, yeah.
And do proof it on time. That's the key.
I remember speaking to somebody a few years ago that had a canvas tilt and he'd parked his Land Rover up for 6 months over the winter, but underneath a tree and all the leaves
on
the roof. And obviously they were wet permanently and they rotted through. Completely rotted through the canvas.
When I bought my Series 3, it was parked under a tree and it had a canvas tilt on the back on the
hoops over the tub. And the bloke who I bought it from was very honest, and he said, look, I haven't moved it for a long time. There's all sorts of stuff falling on it. Apparently, their neighbour's cat climbed up the tree, jumped down onto the tilt and fell through it because it was that rotten.
Okay.
And luckily, they heard it and managed to get it back out. But
could have been trapped in there.
Could have seen its days out in the back of a Series 3, and no one wants that.
Mind you, when you got your 110, it smelled like that cat has been in.
It did, yeah. yes, indeed.
Finding the right parts for your Land Rover or Range Rover shouldn't be an off-road challenge. At bmh4x4.com, we've built a smarter way to get you back on track. Our new website is now live, the simple, fast and reliable way to find the parts and accessories you need. Supplying quality parts for Defender 1983 to 2016, Discovery 1, 2, 3 and 4, Range Rover Sport 2005 to 2013 with Range Rover P38A and L322 coming soon. All parts are backed by expert knowledge, quick delivery and a 2-year quality guarantee. Visit bmh4x4.com, built by enthusiasts for enthusiasts.
Anyway, you mentioned laying vehicles up. Duncan Davies has been in touch and he has a question on that exact subject.
Okay.
Would you like to
hear it? Walk under the tree.
Yeah, not under, avoid trees. He says, g'day chaps, British born, grew up in South Africa, spent 10 years in the UK and now I live in Sydney and I have my Defender 300 TDI stored in Johannesburg. I'm a subscriber to the magazine and listen to the podcast religiously. I'm always amazed at the condition of the outer envelope of the mag, yet the magazine always makes it through. He says, I think my postie must love Land Rovers too. It's a fair old distance, isn't it?
It is a long way.
So, I haven't been to South Africa for 3 years and I'm planning to take 2 months off work. 1 and a bit months to work on the Land Rover and then 2 weeks to take my two teenage daughters and wife through the Maremme in Botswana to create one of those once-of-a-lifetime memories. The Land Rover's done the trip once or twice before. He says, the Landy hasn't been started for 3 years and while stored under shade cloth, it is under the African sky as it's too tall for the garage. Is on the high veld, so no real concerns about rust. I often hear the phrase, you need to use your Land Rover for it to be reliable, but I'm not sure what goes wrong when you don't. My question is, what are the top 5 mechanical things you would spend time on replacing or reconditioning other than the normal service items like oil and coolant? Prior to it being started 3 years ago, it stood for 3 years before that. Breaking down with lions around is probably going to cause me some issues. Especially if you're with your family. They would be very annoyed, I'm sure. Mm. He goes on to say, really love your work and how you keep alive my passion for Land Rovers despite being so far away from mine. I got into Land Rovers when I was at school in the 80s. And Camel launched a competition where you tore off the end of the cartons of cigarettes and posted them in. I emptied months and months and hundreds of cartons into the single pack dispenser and sent them into the competition and won nothing. But developed a fascination with Camel Trophy and Land Rovers, and I never took up smoking. Kind regards, Duncan.
There you go.
Thursdays.
So basically, he's asking what 5 things... first of all, he's asking what actually goes wrong with a Land Rover if you leave it parked up for too long without using it. And secondly, what would he do on top of standard servicing to make sure it's going to be good to use?
I'm going to start with battery.
Yeah.
I'll just get a new one.
Yeah, unless it's been on a maintenance thing for 3 years, which seems unlikely.
Seems like a long time.
I would I'd be tempted to put a fresh one on it too, because if you've got a cell in that battery that's starting to die, it might start up with a jump, but then if you're out in the middle of nowhere and the alternator can't keep up, you're going to have a bad time.
Yes, I agree. And probably tyres, you know.
Tyres, I would say.
Depends what they're like when they got parked up.
So generally speaking, if they're in the shade and pumped up to like 50 or 60 PSI when you're not using the Land Rover, they should be okay. When vehicles are delivered to dealerships before they have their pre-delivery inspection, the tyres are always set to like 65 PSI to stop them flat spotting. When the cars are parked up in storage. So provided the sun hasn't been baking them and drying them out and they've been stored at a sensible pressure, you shouldn't really have too many problems with them. Obviously, if they're like 10 years old, then change them because they're going to be on the way out. I would say go underneath, check all your
axle oils and grease your prop shafts.
Yes.
Because the UJs probably will have had a little bit of potentially a bit of corrosion setting in where they haven't spun for so long. So pump them full of grease and make sure your axle oils are all correct. Gearbox, transfer box oils, make sure there's no water in the oils. Obviously, if there's condensation where they've been sitting, change if necessary. Other than that,
fuel.
Diesel's a lot more forgiving than petrol.
Yeah, or I'll change the filter.
Yeah, that wouldn't do any harm.
I would change the filter and run some diesel through it, burn that off before you ever go on your trip.
Yeah.
Get another fresh tank through it, make sure there's no build-up of rust in the tank because it's blocking filters. And
good shout. Yeah, definitely.
Check all your electrics work.
Yes, because things like...
corroded up headlights and heater switches and...
Obviously, our climate's very different to the warmth of South Africa, but definitely check all your lights work. As you said, hazard switch is a big one because then your indicators won't work if that fails and things like that, really.
Your wiper blades might have gone bristle.
They might have perished, yet. Yeah. Pop some new fresh blades on it.
That's one of my pet haters.
What?
Windscreen wipers that don't clear the screen.
It is annoying, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, my God. Just go and buy new ones.
They cost, yeah, pennies, especially for a Defender.
Mm, they are so short.
Other than that, I mean, you're not going to be suffering from rust or anything like that. You're probably all right. I think the Land Rover sitting around is a lot more of a problem when the air is constantly damp. The grass grows up into the chassis.
That's the worst thing. Yeah.
Exactly. It holds moisture. The other thing, of course, is on the same vein as tyres, is check all your brake lines and your clutch line to make sure they're not hard and perished and brittle.
Well, technically, you should change your brake fluid every 2 years.
You should. But if the car's not been driven for 3 years and the brake lines have been sat in the same position, they could have gone hard. And make sure none of the calipers are seized. So get it rolling and then let it coast to a stop and make sure you haven't got a dragging brake anywhere, because that would be bad. Heat up your wheel bearings and cook all the grease and not do much for your fuel consumption either.
No. Apart from that, I think that's it.
Yeah.
Basically, rebuild your Land Rover ratchets.
I think there's probably five things in that.
I think it's, yeah, easily.
I think we've maybe even gone over five.
We have.
Yeah, so there's a few things you should check, but
and otherwise, just going to enjoy it.
Definitely. I think Land Rovers do tend to stand up to being stood a little bit better than other sort of classics, if you like, but there's no harm in checking it over before you go. Definitely not. What else have we got?
Yeah, because we've had a bit of a, you know, the last 2 weeks we've had Nick Dimbleby on the podcast, haven't we? So
Indeed.
We're a bit questions.
Behind on the old listeners' questions. Peter Brightwell has been in touch. He's got a really interesting email, actually. You see them, I'm showing Steve a picture. They look kind of like Toylanders, don't they?
Are they a bit bigger than Toylanders?
They are, Steve. I'm glad you asked. He says...
Yeah. That wasn't segued in. That was
a genuine reaction.
A genuine observation.
Peter says, good afternoon, LRM. I wanted to share my story with you after listening to the podcast recently and thoroughly enjoying everyone else's. He says, I'm Peter. I'm a long-time reader of LRO and LRM, Series 3 owner of 18 years, an obsessive but first-time caller. Martin, I met you and Neil Watterson a few years ago, briefly at Cars and Coffee at a Lancaster Insurance in St Ives. I remember it well. Neil even popped me into the first issue of Land Rover Life. He says, I love the podcast and the magazines. It was you and my uncle Andy that gave me the passion for these silly vehicles long ago. And that segues me rather nicely through into my topic. My uncle was an avid reader of the magazines as well. He had restored a Series 1. He had Defenders, Series 3 station wagons and a Range Rover-based hybrid. He called the Rear Range Rover. That actually rings some bells. Do you remember the Rear Range Rover? I'm sure I've seen that. Anyway, no, he says,
I can't think of that.
I have brilliant memories of going around Salisbury Plain near where he and my aunt live, around all the lanes, the green lanes near Corsham, and him proudly showing me the other end of Box Tunnel that, in brackets, the tourists don't see. He also loved going down past Stonehenge and on the lane there waving at all the tourists. He says later on he bought a Toylander kit for his numerous grandchildren, family, and, well, anyone else who wanted to go. This ignited something, as he was very disappointed with the kits. He said they were too small, too slow, and didn't have an engine. He had unwittingly found a new hobby. He would take whatever Briggs & Stratton-powered lawnmower he could find, lengthen the chassis, remove the body, and then build a Land Rover on top. This eventually led to two Willys overland vehicles, three Land Rovers, a van, a terrifyingly short wheelbase mower, and a kind of vintage car-looking thing. All the kids in my family have been ferried around the trees at the end of their garden in these, and we remember them fondly. We sadly lost him a few years ago, much too early, and leaving my aunt with a stunning garage filled with toys. Me and Andy were rare in our family, as no one else is hands-on with cars, so it fell to me to recently go over and get this collection of beautifully made models going again. Much cleaning of stale fuel, carb rebuilds, spark plugs, and changing of V-belts has happened, and we're nearly there. I wanted to share our story with you all. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I thought also it might chime in with the new Scale Matters part of the magazine. My aunt will also be selling some of these, and we would love to find them good homes. I need not mention the sentimental value, as I'm sure, but we all just don't have anywhere to enjoy them ourselves. If you could help in any way to connect this lot with a caring new home, or maybe find some space in the mag, that would be outstanding. For a Land Rover man like my uncle, I couldn't think of a better outlet to contact. Cheers, and keep up the amazing content. And then he's attached some photos and a YouTube video. And he says, my mum's still telling me off for going far too fast around her garden. So if you like the idea of a Toylander type ride-on driving Land Rover or Jeep or Hot Rod, Peter sounds like he's got some coming up for sale. So I won't give out Peter's email address on the podcast, but if you drop me an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk, I would pass on your details to him, and then he can make contact. The photos are great. I will see what I can do regarding sharing them, but they are like, they look kind of like a quintessential Toylander, but they're bigger and more powerful.
Yeah, that, I mean, perfect. Who wouldn't want one of those?
Exactly.
Like, you know, even just like young kids, getting kids into Land Rovers.
Race
on. It starts there.
Yeah, definitely. It's a really cool story. Thank you for sharing that, Peter. I always see Toylanders at where there's certainly quite a few that come to LRM Live. In fact, the Mini Rovers bring a whole load, don't they? And
let kids
have it go around the course. And yeah, it's a really, they're the sort of memories that kids remember for forever, really, aren't they? So yeah, fair play to you. That's a really nice story, and hopefully they find some good homes.
I think they will.
Yeah.
You know your 4x4. You've chosen every upgrade, every bolt-on with purpose. So when it comes to tyres, chunkier, wider, more capable for the conditions, you want the perfect fit. Not just any tyre, your tyre. That's why you'll choose 4x4tyres.co.uk, the wheel and tyre specialists, trusted by Land Rover owners and serious off-roaders alike. Whether you're upsizing, overlanding, making your Defender look the part, or your Discovery turn heads, we'll guide you to the right set. With over 800 fitting locations across the UK, from online to on-road, we've got you covered. Browse by vehicle, wheel size or brand. 4x4tyres.co.uk. The right fit, the right place, the right price.
If you buy one, let us know, because it'd be quite cool to see it at the show or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And LRM Live, of course, Mini Rovers will be there. You can, so if you've got little ones that want to drive, your have a go, see what it's all about, then bring them along.
They get a driving license, don't they?
Do they?
Yeah, they get like a driving license and a stamp, and then when they get a few stamps, and then they get a free go because they've almost like a loyalty card driving license.
Very cool.
Yeah, and they take it to each show.
Excellent. Also, while on the subject of shows, if you fancy helping us out at LRM Fest, we are looking for off-road course marshals. Our good friend Neil Watterson is running the off-road course. He's putting it all together. He'll be clerk of course, if you like. The Terra Firma off-road course, no less. And he is on the lookout for people who can give us a hand, basically, over the weekend. You'll get free access to the show. You'll get a little merch bundle. And, yeah, just make sure people get around safely.
VIP camping.
VIP camping.
And the marshals will already be camped together.
So if you need to have a reasonable amount of off-road experience, you need to, you know, have a sensible head on your shoulders. If that sounds like you and you'd like to come along and give us a hand, drop me an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk. I'll pass you on to Neil, and then he can give you all the information.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it'd be a fantastic weekend.
Oh, absolutely.
Cannot wait.
Both will. LRM
Live Fest. I was down at Newbury last week.
Oh, were you?
Having a site visit, a bit of a recce.
Yeah.
I'm going to put things.
How's it looking?
It's looking very good.
That's what we like.
Yeah, just fine-tuning the layout of where everyone's going to be. Yeah, more importantly, where the beer tent was going to be and the entertainment stand.
That is the absolute, yeah.
So we've got that nailed now.
Good stuff.
Yeah, so that's really important.
Real buzz building about that. I'm really
keen for it. It's going to be a cracking show. It's not that long now.
Laws LRM Live, that's only a few months.
3 months.
3 months. We will be partying in the Malvern Hills. It's going to be good. Come down to that, of course. Our original sort of two-day show, if you like.
Yeah.
Really, really cool weekend. Loads of great traders there. Going to have loads of great entertainment there as well. Arena stuff going on all weekend.
Some good stuff planned.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we'd love to see you there. As the camping's filling up nicely there, isn't it?
Yeah, both events really good. It's going to be just great.
It's going to be cracking. 2026 is going to be like a new era, I think, of Land Rover event.
Oh, and if you're a club,
yeah,
don't forget, get your application in.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
shows at lrm.co.uk. Tell us how many, who you are, what club you are, how many people want to camp on the stand, and we'll sort you out.
Get stuck in. We would love to see you there.
And if you're part of a club, get a discount.
Yeah, exactly.
Simple as that.
Yeah, yeah.
For both shows.
What more reason do you need to come along and have a cracking time?
And when it's gone, you know, every show runs out of space for clubs.
Yeah, it does.
So you do have availability at both.
Get in there quickly. Also, very cool show deals on LRM subscriptions. We might have some pretty special offers alongside that, shall we say. Don't give too much away.
Say just no more, because there's a lot of work to do.
I'm excited.
I don't want to commit to it here and now, but yeah, there will be some great stuff.
Yeah, so by all means. Sign up to the email newsletter so you know about all this stuff before anyone else. On that note, I think we'll call this one. We've only got through a small percentage of our listeners' questions, so we'll have to come back next week with a few more.
We should. And it's a high time you brought back Products of the Week.
Yeah,
I quite enjoy Products of the Week.
Yeah, I do need to. I haven't even talked about... I've been university last week.
Yeah, let's talk about that quickly.
Sure. So Aston University in Birmingham is an absolutely amazing place. I sort of heard about what they were doing through Chris at ORE and Ian at IRB Developments, who have both been helping out and supporting the projects they've got going on there. The chap in charge, the chief executive, is a real Land Rover. He's got a huge passion for Land Rovers, basically. And what he's doing is he's sort of opening the floor to engineering students and students who want to do things like motorsport or go into main dealer apprenticeships, things like that. And he's basically said, if you want to come along and help us out do some projects, you can, because they've got like a workshop space. And basically it's snowballed and they've got sort of like three series Land Rovers on the go, a 110 that they're converting into a pop-top camper. They've got some other sort of non-Land Rover projects like electric buggies and a Caterham they're doing up.
Really?
I was there when it was half term. The number of students that were there, obviously they didn't have to be there. They could have been down the pub or...
So this is their own time?
In their own time, turned up, and they were so excited and engaged in getting stuck into these projects. They were fitting pop-out windows in the side of the 110. They were fitting a ORE winch bumper and a Warrior winch to the front. They were doing... Gwyn Lewis had supplied a new suspension, so extreme damper mounts, longer dampers, new springs, so they were doing that. Just activity, wherever you look. They were rubbing down body panels to ready to paint them.
Wow.
Painting wheels. It was really, really cool. It was like a real hive of activity.
So you never went to uni, did you?
No.
Do you wish you had that?
If uni was going to be like that, I would have done, yeah.
Because I saw you were there on, like, Instagram, I think.
Yeah.
And it looked Instagram. Really good.
It was amazing. The facilities they've got. I mean, the Land Rover sort of engineering part of it was amazing. That was what I was there for, obviously. Yeah. But I got a little sort of tour of that area of the university. And they have optometry, so people will study eyes and things like that. And they basically got a scaled down opticians in the university, so everything is as it would be if you were actually working there.
Okay.
They've got jewelry making facilities, people who want to go into be like the jewelry industry. They've got like a hospital bay, so they've got
all sorts of incredible technology packed into this building. And I was just
amazing.
My mind was blown.
Could you really, like, you were really impressed with the students?
Oh,
as I expected, like when you said you were going, I thought like a few like hanging around because they have to be there.
No, not at all.
Opposite.
They were the most enthusiastic, respectful, and honestly brightest bunch of, not kids, they're like 16, 17, I have seen in forever. They were, honestly, if anyone moans and says, oh, kids these days aren't interested in going into the motor trade or into industry.
You hear that a lot.
Oh, my.
I hear that pretty much every day.
Let me assure you, they absolutely are. And the ones that are pursuing that career, those career paths, they're not doing it because they can't do anything else. They're doing it because they're 100% passionate about it and they really, really, really want to do it.
That's amazing.
I came away filled with
optimism
yeah. and reassurance that the motoring industry on that level, so like the hands-on technical side of things, 100% going in the right direction. With people like that on board, brilliant.
That's fantastic.
There was guys there that were, one of them was really into his, I took a load of magazines along, and one of them was super into his off-road racing. He really wants to go off and do motorsport engineering, follow a career in that. A couple of them were really keen to do, they were doing apprenticeships at Rolls-Royce. So on the aerospace side rather than vehicles. And then there was a couple that were really, really keen to get into JLR apprenticeships, which is what I did years ago when it was just Land Rover. So yeah, it was just fantastic. I'm so, you know, privileged to have been invited along. Obviously, Chris was there from ORE. Ian was there helping out, giving technical advice and sort of showing these guys and girls how it all worked and answering any questions. It was just a really, really cracking day.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, you just make the assumptions that the youth of today don't want to work and they just want to sit on computers.
Yeah, that is couldn't be further from the truth from what I saw.
No, that's good.
But I'll be keeping an eye on the magazine, so I'll be doing a piece for the mag as well to sort of, because I've explained it, that you need to see it really to sort of get a scale of what they
do. Yeah.
It's super cool.
Who owns all the Land Rovers they're working on?
So the chief executive owns, I think his 110, his is the 110 they're doing the pop-top conversion on. The long-term goal with that is they're going to make it into an overlander because they do a lot of charity work. So they'll be loading that up with supplies and delivering the supplies to sort of outposts and helping along the way. They help go out and build schools and things like that. The series Land Rovers were sort of from all over the place, really. I think the university owns one of them, and then another couple were sort of just acquaintances' vehicles that had, like, one was in for a full rebuild, one had a few bits of tidying up to do, like door alignment and stuff like that. Yeah, it was really, really good.
No, brilliant.
They're proper into it. So thanks, Aston University, for inviting me along. It was really cracking.
Nice. Yeah.
For now,
I'm going to go and have a look at
110s.
Not actually physically look at them, but I'll have a quick look on there, see if anything. I've been looking on there. Auto traders. Not many around, you know.
No.
There's not like loads.
Well, you want an XS really for all the nice bits, and they are the ones that command the money.
Really strong money.
Yeah. I think you should buy one.
Yeah, just do it. And then
it's the way forward.
I think it is.
Anyway.
On that note, let's get out of here.
Yeah. Thanks again for listening. Land Rover Martin on Instagram. You're Steve Miller Automotive. Follow Land Rover Monthly on Facebook, on Instagram. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. We're filming tomorrow.
Oh, yes, we are.
So that'll be good. And see you next week.
Bye for now.